Wanted to share just a devotional thought with you. I entitled it, I Am the Voice of the Future. I'm not speaking as myself here, but I'm speaking for God. I heard that in a song, and it was poorly conceived. It was emphasizing just things here on earth. But God is the voice of the future. Our God, and it's hard to grasp this concept about time or the lack of time, God exists outside of time. So in that, he is greater than time, and he exists simultaneously, all at the same time, beside every point in time, without existing in time. So outside of the passing of time, it's as though every slight nanosecond, he is right there next to it. And he doesn't pass through time like we do. It's just as we're passing, he's always there, already there, and still back where we were. He's everywhere. This means that when he speaks, from his viewpoint of all time, all at once, he delights to comfort us as we travel through what he sees as the fearful times of our brief lives. Now remember God's challenge to Moses, Numbers 11:23. And the Lord said unto Moses, is the Lord's hand waxed short? Waxed is the word for grow. We say the waxing moon and a waning moon. Wax and wane. Is it grown short? And he says, thou shalt see now whether my word shall come to pass unto thee or not. Do you think I'm lacking power? Just watch this. Recall God's reassurances that he gave through Isaiah, Isaiah 42:9. Behold, the former things are come to pass, and new things do I declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them. God also existing in the time of those things that are coming, he says to Isaiah before it happens, I know it happens. I'm actually there. I see that. It's happening there in what is future to you. Remember the detailed revelation God sent to Daniel during the Babylonian captivity of Israel. Daniel 10:14. Now I am come, the angel says, to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days. For yet the vision is for many days. He actually laid out for him how long it would be until the Messiah would come. He talks about the various things that would have to happen. So through chapter 11 and the beginning of 12, the angel shared with Daniel the future history of Israel through Persia, Greece, especially paying attention to the persecutor Antiochus the Four Epiphanes, and he's the one whose persecution of the Jews foreshadows the activities of the future Antichrist. He defiled the temple. He's the one that had a sow sacrificed on the Jewish altar. So that was made it unclean. They couldn't use it. Whereas the Antichrist will actually erect an image of himself in the temple, saying, I am the God that you are to worship. Let us then take comfort in the words of the one who speaks from our past, our present, and our future all at once. The one who knows how it turns out, the one who really remembers what we've gone through. Hebrews 6:17-18. Wherein God, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability, the unchangeableness of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath. The fact that God says something confirms it, but then God said, I take the pledge that what I'm saying is true. That by two immutable, two unchangeable things, in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation, consolation of our heart, who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us. If you catch the idea, he says, God says things will be better in the future. Well, everybody likes to say that. It'll be okay. How do you know it's going to be okay? Why do you think it's going to be okay? What power do you have to guarantee it's going to be okay? Well, we have nothing, you see. We're making a guess. We're trying to pretend like we know. When God says it, he's grounded in the past, sees exactly what's happening in the future, and is standing there beside what will happen. And so he says, that should give you strong consolation. We who have fled for refuge, going through trials, to lay a hold upon that hope set before us, because that hope is not one of those hope-so things. It is assured to be true. The two things are God's promise itself, and then he takes the oath to fulfill the promise. The word impossible, impossible for God to lie, impossible means literally powerless. I thought that was interesting. God is powerless to lie. Infinite God, being who he is, has many things he is powerless to do, because he is infinitely one thing, he's powerless in another. So here, he cannot lie. Not just that he will not, it's that he cannot. This is impossible. He is powerless to do that. Every being acts according to his nature, and God's nature is truth. He can't go contrary to his nature. So let me summarize. This gives us strong consolation. Consolation is that word parakaleo for comfort, exhortation, or encouragement. Slight difference of taking somebody from where they are, the bad place, and helping them along to the good place. For comfort, they're in a sad place, you move them to the comfortable place. Exhortation, they're in a wrong place and you're urging them to get to the right place. And then encouragement, they're just discouraged or fearful, and you put their arm around your neck and walk them over to the place of encouragement to do the right thing. It pictures God's promise from the future coming alongside to help us. He wanted us to know he's always there for us. Always there. Omnipresent. all through time. So I hope that we may go to the scripture when God promises something. We're not saying, well, I hope he knows what he's talking about, because he's already there.